in, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 765. I am Lisa Sheps, and I am joined today by my co-host, Lisa Sheps. I'm all by myself with my guest today. You are listening to me on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live at koop.org. Remember, if it's theater, it's on Offstage and On the Air. Don't go away.
Hurry, hurry, and step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up.
Wednesday, March 27th, 2024. On the show today, we have Speedrun Studios and their show, Men on Boats. And then later on, we'll be talking to Sharon Anderson of ATX Theater. And of course, we're going to have lively discussions of the world of theater around Austin, New York, Chicago, Albuquerque, and, I don't know, the Catskills. Don't go away.
Make you a pawn in their war. Come on, Dad. You were meant for much more.
Okay, it's another wonderful cloudy Wednesday here in Austin, Texas. I just want to send my shout-outs to Nicole Shiro, who's at home with a migraine. She's lying down. The lights are off. She's got an eye pillow over her eyes, and hopefully she's feeling better. So I guess I should be talking to her in my best ASMR voice. Nicole, feel better. But I am joined by my guests here that I will introduce right now. They're both the Speedrun Studios, and we're going to talk about their show in a second, but let me just say who they are so they can join in the wonderful conversations. We have Austin Savat. Hi, Austin.
Hello, hello. Good to be here.
And Clint Leno.
Hello. Thank you very much.
Welcome, welcome to Offstage and On the Air. Neither of you have been on the show before.
No, first time.
We have not.
Well, welcome. Well, wonderful. Of course, you listen every week, so you
obviously
know what the show's
yes,
about.
Of course. Yes, huge,
of course.
Huge fans, yeah.
So that song that we just played is from the Bronx Tale, and it's called These Streets. You probably have no idea why I played a song called These Streets.
Bronx Tale is one of my unfortunate musical theater gaps.
Yeah, for good reason. I think it's actually it's a good thing that Nicole isn't here because I think she liked the Bronx Tale. Not my favorite either. But I played that. It really has nothing to do with the Bronx Tale. I just did the streets. They renamed 48th Street to Rachel Chavkin Way or
yes.
Chavkin Way. We have nodding going on
my
here.
Directing hero.
She
love
is
that
amazing. Do you have a favorite piece that she's directed?
I mean, I fell in love with her work during Great Comet.
She did a great job with that.
Hadestown is my favorite piece of art ever made.
Really?
Period.
Okay, yeah, so I was just talking about this Hadestown. The other day because yeah. I am not a fan of Hadestown.
Ooh.
I don't understand. And I'm all by myself. Everybody loves it. I'm going, oh, okay, I don't get it. So one day you'll explain it to me why it's so great. But she's an amazing genius. I fell in love with her when I saw Indecent, which as a director myself, I would look at the choices she made and goes, and I would tell myself I would have not made that choice, and it was a brilliant choice. And so, amazing, amazing director. So it's South Chavkin Way, which is 48th Street, directly between Hadestown and Lampica, which are both playing on the Great White Way right now. So did you see Hadestown when it was here in town, or did you see it in New York?
I did. I have seen it twice in New York and once here in Austin with the touring cast.
Okay.
Big Hadestown fan here.
Lovely.
On this side of the table. Yeah.
Well, good. Well, I'll tell you what. I saw it just in here in the tour, and when I said I left and I went, I don't know what all the big fuss is about. I mean, it's pleasant. It wasn't terrible, but I didn't love it. And everybody's saying, well, you know, in Broadway, you have the elevators and Hades is down and we don't have that. And so I said, well, could that be it? But was it that big of a difference between New York and the Roadshow?
Honestly, I mean, I do love the changes that they made. The height does add a lot to it.
Mm-hmm.
I think just my personal, I mean, Anais Mitchell as well.
Yep.
Her lyrics and her music, and just I'm a huge Greek mythology buff, so I'm just
okay.
I'm a magnet to a show like that. So I get that it's not for everybody for sure.
Well, but it seems to be for everybody except for me. But to me, it was like, okay, the music was good. I did not think the music was great. Mm. The story, there's no surprises in the story. You know, it's
they lay it all
mythology.
Out in the opening number, yeah.
So anyway, I wanted to like it so much. It was one of those ones that I went in really, really wanting to love it, but I didn't. We did have an opening on Broadway. Did either of you read the book or see the movie Water for Elephants?
I have seen the movie.
You've seen the movie?
Yes.
And your thoughts?
My thoughts are... And this is going to sound very radio safe, but it is the truth. My thoughts are solidly neutral. I'm like, that is a film that I watched. I enjoyed my time in the theater.
There you go. That makes a lot of sense. Well, so it has opened up the Water for Elephants, the musical. Did They Like It review aggregator, they had... they're making me do math now. 12 reviews, 7 of which were positive, 4 were mixed, and 1 was negative. It says, here's a little synopsis. After losing what matters most, a young man jumps a moving train, unsure where the road will take him, and finds a new home with a remarkable crew of a traveling circus and a life and love beyond his wildest dreams. Seen through the eyes of his older self, his adventure becomes a poignant reminder that if you choose the ride, life can begin at any age. Jesse Green of the New York Times loved it. It did open at the Imperial Theater last Thursday. And of course, you had the big star of the show, I guess, is the elephant, which is a big old puppet.
Which I love. I love puppetry in Broadway. That is something that I myself am a huge, you know, proponent of. I love it so much every time they do it. I didn't get to see King Kong, which breaks my heart, but I would have loved to see how they did that.
I totally wish Nicole was here because she did see King Kong. And of course, the show itself was terrible. But the puppet was supposed to be amazing, and she thought it was amazing.
Well, and one of my most transcendent Broadway experiences was seeing War Horse.
Yes.
Because I just, like,
see
I
it at the
cry
Beaumont,
every time.
At Lincoln Center?
Yes.
Did you also see the Roadshow when it was here?
I didn't see the roadshow here. I saw the roadshow in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Okay. Well, I mean, the difference between the Beaumont, where the horses come in from the back of the house and ride through the audience, and then when you see it in the proscenium and it's a little different, still amazing. I totally agree with you. War Horse is just amazing.
Yeah, it's transcendent.
And watching the little colt, the puppeteers operating the small little colt where the actual puppeteers are outside, and you just get entranced by this little puppet. And listeners to this show know, I'm not a huge fan of puppetry. Please don't tell everybody. But I just, I
not
do.
Not a huge fan of puppetry.
Writing it down, Lisa.
I appreciate it. I respect the H out of it. But I do love the big puppets. And of course, the first time it was in wide release, on Broadway was The Lion King, which I saw that when it opened. And Julie Taymor is another directorial genius, if you ask me, unless you spoil Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark 1.0.
You know, I did. And as a
1.0?
Stunt person,
you saw the first one before 2.0.
I think so. It may have been 2.0, but either way, whichever one I saw, I'm like, I get why this is.
Did you see it after it opened?
I loved it. Yeah, I saw it.
Okay, so you saw 2.0.
So I saw 2.0. Okay.
Yeah, you saw the one that does not
include
Julie Taymor
on Spider-Man.
Well, so
I saw 2.0 as well.
It was fun. It was not good. And there's plenty of things that I think you can enjoy that are fun and not good. But as a stunt person, I'm also like, you shouldn't be doing this to your stunt performers.
There's a space for that on Broadway.
Well,
sure.
Interestingly, and listeners of this show know, I had the privilege of sitting in the booth listening to the call of the show. During it. It's pretty amazing and all the automation they use. Anyway, Water for Elephants pretty much was roundly enjoyed, except for a couple of people. I did not read the negative review, but I did listen to a podcast. They talked about the negative review, and it was extremely negative.
Oh, dear.
I didn't like it at all.
Yeah, I was going to say, I have only seen the set design and lighting design, which looks gorgeous, but I think it's telling that that's all I've seen about it.
Right. Well, so it takes place in the circus, and one of the things that, you know, circus arts are very popular these days. Of course, this is old school circus with animals, but it tells a story of this man falling in love with one of the star circus performers who happens to be the girlfriend of the ringmaster and the runner of the thing. This is also one of those shows that's been kind of popular lately where the music is written by a collaborative. Mm. It's the Pigpen Theater Company, just a seven-man indie folk collective that wrote it. Directed by Jessica Stone, and some of the actors are Grant Gustin, who plays the lead role, Jacob, and then his older person, Greg Edelman, and then Marlena, who plays the love interest, is played by Isabel McCalla. And then the she's there's a word for it. People that ride horses.
Equestrian.
Yes, thank you. She's got an equestrian act.
Good pull.
But the name of the horse is Silver Star, and it's another puppet played by two acrobats. Antoine Bussereau, another French name. And they operate the head and the mane, and Keaton Hentoff Killian does the body. It's interesting.
Very cool.
The puppetry is by, so he talks about, this is, the review is by Jesse Green, the New York Times, the puppetry and all the technical stuff he calls out as a group. So the puppetry is by Ray Wetmore, J.R. Goodman, and Camille Labar. The choreography is Jesse Robb and Shana Carroll. Circus acts are by, Shana Carroll, and the design, sets are by Takeshi Kata, costumes by David Israel Reynoso, lighting by Bradley King, and sound by Walter Traubach, and the projections by David Bengali. Rarely does he sort of call out the whole design team in a review. So that's that. So other critics said, the New York Daily News, Chris Jones said, Stone shares credit with Shana Carroll, the circus director and co-choreographer with Jesse Robb for the show. I don't know who precisely did what, but the result is one of the most authentic circus theme shows to make it to Broadway. Robert Hoffler of The Wrap said, as one might expect from a show about show business, Pigpen borrows mightily from John Kander and Fred Ebb. I chose that quote specifically for Nicole, who is a big fan of Kander and Ebb. She's not here to hear that. Sarah Holdren of Vulture wrote, if, like me, you are highly susceptible to sawdust and tinsel, then much of Water for Elements will delight on the basis of spectacle alone, and that's okay. So, Water for Elephants.
That actually brings up something that I wanted to say when you were talking about, like, some people
Bring it
love
on.
It, some people hate it. Mm-hmm. I do think there needs to be an important distinction between shows that you see for the story and shows that you see for the spectacle. Mm-hmm. Because there are so many Broadway shows that I go, like, well, that wasn't the best written book I've ever heard, but man, was it pretty.
Is it putting butts in seats? Is it fun to watch?
Yeah, you know? for sure.
I would argue that maybe you shouldn't be going just for the spectacle. But I get it. I get it sometimes. And that's, again,
sure.
Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark. There was a lot of spectacle there. There was not much show. Go ahead.
I'm full chest on Mamma Mia being my guilty pleasure.
It's an
objectively bad show, but it's so much fun, you know?
Yeah. I'm so mad at ABBA and Mamma Mia for that because they started that trend of jukebox musicals that has not ended to this day. So that was Water for Elephants. There is another play in development about Tammy, not another, but a play about Tammy Faye Baker that it just looks like fun. It's a transfer from the West End, and it's starring Katie Brabant, who I don't know, but who is an Olivier winner and well-known in London. But it also stars Andrew Rannells, who I love.
Yes.
I am watching, I don't know if y'all are TV watchers, but I've been watching Girls Five Eva, and
not
Andrew
funny.
Rannells is in it, and he's so funny. Anyway, so this is it's going to come to previews in New York on October 19th and open at 14th at the Palace Theater, which has been closed since I think 2018 for refurbishment. I don't know if it's a theater that they were actually raising up or not, but it's going to be the first show to open at the Palace, but the second performance oh God, what's his name?
It's Ben Platt, isn't it?
Ben Platt. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
Ben Platt is doing a concert there. Mm. You know stuff. That's good. That's
good to be here.
Relatively obscure. Not a lot of people know that. So he's doing a concert at the Palace before Tammy Faye opens. Are y'all Tammy Faye fans? You're not quite old enough to know when they were like in their heyday, I don't think.
I know the name. I'm clearly a Ben Platt fan. That's
okay. Tammy Faye Baker and Jim Baker were big televangelists.
Yes.
And Jim Baker had a fall from grace. I forgot exactly what happened. An affair, may have been with a man. I don't remember. This is how rumors get started. But there's a wonderful miniseries starring somebody and somebody that was really, really good. You know, that person that was in that show with that guy.
And they did the thing.
They did the thing. Exactly. I'm glad we have that together.
Consensus.
Here's something I think is interesting. As theater runners yourselves, and I run a theater as well, there is a theater in, is it Washington State that is for sale, the Regent Theater. In Massachusetts. I'm sorry. It was established in 1916. They're selling it, but they're selling it. What I love about this, they want to make sure they sell it to somebody that's going to keep it a theater. They don't want it to turn into a condo. So I think that's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I went onto their website, which wasn't the best website in the world, but it looks like a great theater. I will purchase it. Who knows? But anyway, the Regent Theater. Y'all ever heard of the Regent Theater?
I don't think so.
It looks like one of those small town theaters that was a movie theater at one point in its lifetime, because it has that look to it. Sort of like the Palace in Georgetown.
Gotcha.
That's the end of that story. Well, that was a good story. I got lots more like it.
We all learned. We all grew.
I don't know how I missed this, and I am sure that Nicole talked about this while I was away, but have you heard of the off-Broadway show musical called Teeth?
I don't believe I have.
Yeah. It's by Michael R. Jackson, who, of course, wrote, amongst other things, A Strange Loop and White Girl in Danger. And it's based on a 2007 cult horror film.
I know. I was about to say, is it based on the film?
Whoa. It is. Do you know it?
I do.
Had never heard of it. So do
whoa.
You...
As
best you can you explain to folks what that film is about?
For radio sake.
For radio?
Yeah. For radio.
So basically, a young woman discovers that she has developed teeth in a very sensitive part of her body and uses them to...
In her genitals.
Yes, to... Okay, I didn't know how...
Yeah, we
how
can
much,
say genitals.
Okay, cool. So she has developed teeth in her genitals and uses them to get revenge on men who have either wronged her or are attempting to assault her.
Yeah, so it's a musical now, and it's been extended to, I think, April 24th. That's off-Broadway. I don't know. I want to see it.
I would have to see it. Yes.
I want to see it.
You should. If the musical is any... I want to see how they turned that film into a musical. I bet it's hilariously fun.
Well, there are two articles. First of all, there's the review in the New York Times, which is written by Jesse Green, who I'm not sure was really terribly crazy about it, but... the final line in his review says, but in Teeth, I'm sorry to say this Holy Trinity has bitten off more than it can chew.
So, theater journalism.
Yes. But then there's an article about it. Where did I see that? Oh, there's an article about it that just talks about the creation of it with Michael R. Jackson. But it looks really interesting. You can see that. You can see links to those articles at offstageonair.com after I post the show. Let's see what we're doing. We're not doing too terrible on time. Are y'all familiar with the off-Broadway house in New York, 59 East 59 on the east side?
I've heard winds of this.
Well,
of this story.
Yeah. It's been around for a while, but they're doing an amazing thing. They got a $10 million gift through the foundation that basically funds the whole thing. And the foundation is the Kleinhans Theatrical Foundation. You guys run a theater and you rent theater space. I happen to know because you're renting ground floor theater. So the renters at 59 East 59 because of this grant, will pay zero.
Wow. Yep.
A big goose egg.
Totally
right?
Excellent.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. I would love it if I could do that. So some of the theaters that call East 59 East 59 their home is Primary Stages, the Labyrinth Theater Company, New Light Theater Project, Number 11 Productions, and Happenstance Theater. I just think that is amazing, and that makes me just I do so much kvetching about the lack of funding of theater and the idea that it is okay for artists and arts organizations to starve because we love what we do.
Yeah.
And it makes me very angry because, yes, we love what we do, but we should be paid a living wage for what we do. And none of us get paid a living wage.
Yeah.
And when I see stories like this, it just gives me a lot of heart. And 59 East 59 is not, it's not some schmutzy little off Broadway theater down in the Village, which now is, back in my day when I lived in New York, down in the Village was sort of a scuzzy place. Now it's, I'm going to say, out in Sheepshead Bay, Brooklyn or something. But it's a pretty big deal. So that's an amazing, amazing thing. Let's see. What became us? What is that, do you suppose? Let's see. What became us? I have the article here. Oh, this is amazing. This looks amazing. This is another off-Broadway show. It's a show called What Became Us. It's coming to the Atlantic Theater Company. They've got two pairs of performers. These are two-handers. And the show, let me explain the show, or just a sentence about the show before I say who's in it. What Became Us follows two siblings, one born in the old country and one born in this country. And they purposely don't name out the country, and the two sets of performers are both from different nationalities. So the first set of performance is Rosalind Chow and B.D. Wong. Amazing. And so they are obviously from Southeast Asia.
Right.
And they then they are followed by Shore Agadashalu, I'm sure I'm not pronouncing that properly, and Tony Shalhoub. So they are from the Middle East. And then, so that's cast for, actually, I can give you the date. So the first cast is going to perform from May 17th through June 15th. The second cast is going to perform from June 10th through June 29th. So there's an overlap where they're both going to, so you could actually go see a double feature. And I think that because of the casting, the whole feel of the play could be very different from one cast to another.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Does that intrigue you guys?
No, I'm totally into it.
Yeah, I got to look. Yeah, let's go. I got to look more into that.
Yeah, let's do it. And the final thing I want to talk about is Merman the Musical. Are y'all familiar with Ethel Merman?
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Okay.
So this is a musical about Ethel Merman. There is an invitation-only developmental reading of it right now. Megan Sikora is playing the title role. And other people who I do not know, Jeremy Benton, Michael Barisi, Adam Heller, Janet Metz, Manu Naravon, Diane Finley, Robert Sella. And they even call out the person doing the stage directions, which I love, Hans Friedrich. It's got music from the Gershwins, Irving Berlin, Cole Porter, Julie Stein, Stephen Sondheim, amongst others. I've heard of Stephen Sondheim.
Once or twice.
All of those people. But Ethel Merman, of course, everybody knows her as Mama Rose from Gypsy. She was also in Annie Get Your Gun, Anything Goes, Call Me Madam, Panama Hattie, and much more. So it looks like a lot of fun. And this is done by the York Theater Company. So that looks like fun.
Absolutely. Yeah. Good stuff.
I would go see that if I could.
I heard Merman like merman, as in like male mermaid.
I thought it was like a follow-up to like Bat Boy.
Right.
It
is.
Which I would love to do Bat Boy. What a wonderful musical. Funny thing, you should say that. The podcast I listened to, Today on Broadway, they exactly said the same thing. They said this is about Ethel Merman, not half man, half fish.
Right, yeah.
Was funny. My mind did not go there. So let's go out and take a break, and we're going to listen to Ethel Merman singing Hold on. I think I have a little bit of information about this. It's from Something from the Boy, Something for the Boy, which was a Herbert Fields and Dorothy Fields show with music by Cole Porter and starred Ethel Merman. I was also in the West End, and this happened in 1943. It's about three cousins that inherit a Texas ranch that is next to a military base. And I've actually played music from here. Something, one of the songs is about Texas, so I played it because I don't know if y'all know it, but we live in Texas. But let's take a, it's true. Let's take a little
break.
I try
to forget it sometimes.
Yeah, me too. This is called Something from the Boys, from Something from the Boys. We'll be right back.
What are you doing down here in Texas?
I'm going to help the government. I'm going to try to do something for the boys. Back in the days of
We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps. We are sending warm wishes out to Nicole Shiro. I should also say, which I neglected to say early on, that I just wanted to thank Kim Simpson for another incredible International Folk Bazaar. I do love listening to it. I learn something every time I listen. And I have to just congratulate Austin and Clint for being wonderful co-hosts thus far. So mazel tov to the two of you.
Thank you very
much. And now I'm going to reintroduce you as co-directors, and are you both founders of Speedrun Studios?
Yes, founder and artistic director, associate.
An associate, yeah, yes. just associate.
Associate creative director, associate producer. Yes.
Exactly. Well, and that is Austin Savat.
Hello.
Hello, and Clint Leno.
Hello.
And y'all are doing Men on Boats.
Yes.
And what is Men on Boats?
So Men on Boats is a fairly new piece. It was written in 2016 by Jacqueline Backhouse for Playwright Horizons. It is about the first government-paid expedition to map the entirety of the Colorado River and its canyons back in 1869.
I remember that.
Yes. it is a piece about 10 big, burly, straight white dudes played entirely by a diverse cast of women. So our cast is women, trans, and non-binary performers. It's a massive...
Non-male people.
Yes, exactly. It's like anyone who is not a straight white man, right? Yep. And it's a brilliant satire on manifest destiny and male conquest, both in the 1800s and today, while also just giving a lot of women, trans, and non-binary performers like action hero type roles that they don't usually get to play, which I love.
So this is like a 7 and 8 person cast.
It's a 10 people. Yeah.
10 people, yes. And are all they're all just sitting in a boat?
Sort of.
Yeah, I mean, that makes got, staging is pretty easy.
We've
then.
Got four boats.
Four boats
split
okay.
amongst the 10 people.
All right.
But yeah, it is hysterical. It is a very, very fun show.
Excellent. And are you both you're co-directing this? Or directing it?
Director, assistant director, and movement director. For Clint.
And for those of you that are looking at the radio, he said director while pointing to himself. and then
listeners.
Associate director, he pointed to Clint.
Apologies.
Pointing doesn't work on the radio.
Yes.
But it's okay. It's fun to call that out.
It has been a joy to be the movement choreographer for this specific show because there's so much fun in creating boat movement with just people standing in, cutout boats. It's been a lot of fun. It's been a joy to do.
Is it the kind of, I'm imagining like a rowboat mm-hmm. with straps on it. On
Pretty
a
much. Yeah.
More or less, yes.
Love that. So I'm guessing this is a comedy.
Oh, yes.
was it written to be performed by non-males?
Yeah, so not initially. Jacqueline has a brilliant interview somewhere, I wish I could quote it directly, where she talks about, she talks about not initially writing the piece. It's based on like real historical journals that John Wesley Powell wrote during the initial expedition. And she was like a couple of scenes into writing this piece and kept thinking to herself, God, I wish I could play a role like this.
Uh-huh.
And from there, it spiraled into becoming more and more and more satirical as the boulder grew.
As the boulder grew. I love that. I will use that if consider it stolen. So that's wonderful. So I'm guessing there's a lot of movement in this piece, Clint?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Very, very much. There are scenes where they're just sitting around the campfire, enjoying a meal or plotting out their course. But then when they're on the river, rivers being as they are, especially a river as grand and wild as the Colorado, there are moments where they hit swells, whirlpools, waterfalls, and finding a way to show that on stage and really immerse the audience in the dangers of a very wild river while also keeping it sort of farcical, like adding the serious to the comedy sure. has been a very exciting and fun challenge. There are a couple of scenes where you're really going to see the comedy break through the seriousness, and I'm so looking forward to it.
And vice versa, really. I mean, yes. we love bringing them in with the laughs, especially with how the show is structured, with laugh after laugh after laugh, and then backhanding you with, whoa.
And yes. this takes place at the Colorado River that is on the West Coast, not our Colorado River.
Grand Canyon, Colorado River, yeah. yes.
I, for years, thought that the Colorado River that runs through Austin, river. Texas, was the same Colorado River. And literally, I found out by looking at a map and following it and finding that our Colorado River ends, I think in Texas or somewhere north of Texas. Yeah. Well, that's amazing. So tell us about your cast.
Goodness. So Speedrun as a whole is very dedicated to working with young adult people. It's like
me?
Obviously.
I don't understand why
we were very
funny.
Upset you weren't on the audition list. We were very sad.
Yeah. God, we were anticipating it.
I don't audition anymore.
Oh, yes.
No, I'm teasing. Go.
That end of high school through to like college graduate crowd, we cater to like being a transitional company between educational and professional spaces. So that's really who we cater to. So most of our cast are college students or college graduates. And they are it's working with them and honing their skills in the room, providing a professional space for them to try new things and professionally fail and professionally have fun is one of the biggest honors of what I get to do. They are all just so hysterical in their own ways. There are so many, like one of the biggest things that I talked to them about in when we were like very beginning to workshop these characters is like, these are characters from, you know, the 1860s, but what's really going to bring the comedy out is finding, yes, what kind of man you're playing then, but also what kind of man are you playing now?
Right.
Right. Like, how can you bring toxic male stereotypes of 2024 into your performances of these toxic men from the 1860s?
There are no toxic men in 2024. What are you talking about?
Not a one.
Not a one. Well, it sounds like a lot of fun. And how did you approach directing this?
Goodness. I mean, it is just, it's such a dense script to try to dive into because so much of the stage directions leave you out to dry. There's so much of people cutting each other off when they're on the river, especially with just rocks, turn left, turn right. And like, you know, like Clint was saying earlier, trying to piece all of that together has been just an incredible journey. And there's so much, brilliance in physical comedy. There's a ton of slapstick in the show that I've had a ton of fun with. And I love like collaborative leadership, right? As like, I am one of two directors, but I am not the only leader, right? There are all kinds of people, even in the cast, that have skills that I do not, and finding places and ways to let their own improv shine through and make it as unique to them as possible is super, super great.
Yeah, my mind is, as I'm thinking about this, I'm thinking, I see music. Is there music in this?
There is, both diegetic and non-diegetic tracks.
Now there's a word. Now, I know what you mean by that, but my listening audience may not. What do you mean by diegetic?
Diegetic and non-diegetic being like music that the characters themselves are singing versus music like from a soundtrack that they are not necessarily hearing, like background music.
I, of course, knew that term.
And there's a lot of that's been quite a journey as well, finding like music from back in, you know, the 1860s for these characters to hum. You know, Johnny Comes Marching Home, Oh Susanna, you know, these classic tracks, and then giving them new context in this new setting. For sure.
Well, that's right. Now, Speedrun is not all that old, but it's been around for a little bit. You've had a few seasons, haven't you?
We started producing in December of 2022. Mm-hmm. So last year was our first like full season. And we've got a ton planned for 2024, of course. Yeah.
So tell me, I will just shift gears slightly from the show to Speedrun.
Please.
Tell me, what was the impetus for starting Speedrun? Why the name Speedrun, etc.?
Sure. So I was raised as a performer, through middle school and high school and college. Yes, juggling all that. It was my life. And unfortunately, end of high school, going into college, I ran into a mountain of toxicity, of abuse, of cliques and gossip hungry directors and lead. It's unfortunately a common story. There is a lot of drama in drama, right?
True.
Yes. I left college. I am not a college graduate because of that. And I pandemic happened, years of no performance at all. I kept thinking, like, what am I going to do with this? I ended up directing my first show completely independently with the mindset of, like, leading, a lot of the people that we bring on with Speedrun are around the same age as me, which I think is really important to, again, foster these, like, creative relationships.
And what age is that? Because our radio audience is not. They aren't looking at you.
Oh, that's fair. 20-somethings to that's a wide, broad.
Like the three
young
of
adults.
Us.
Young adults.
Yes. Okay.
That was the sort of emphasis in creating a space for young adults to come together and, like, young adult theater led by, pitched by, starring young adults themselves, right? I think there's so much incredible opportunities for young people in the arts in Austin or in the arts in general already, but not a lot that are led by those people.
Right.
And we try to be as collaborative as possible.
Wonderful. And what is the name? Where did you come up with the name Speedrun?
Speedrun is our very first show was a loving run. It's called The Trail to Oregon from Team Starkid, which is a digital theater company out of Ann Arbor, Michigan. And the Speedrun is the cast of our very first show, favorite song in that entire musical.
It's called Speedrun?
Yeah, it's called Speedrun, and it's a loving homage to our first show, as well as perhaps a reference to how quick our rehearsal processes are.
Got it. Wonderful. Well, Men on Boats is opening next weekend, right?
Yes.
When does it open?
April 4th through the 6th. Mm-hmm. So that's next Thursday through Friday and two shows Saturday.
Four performances only.
Yes.
And it is at Ground Floor Theater.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Where can folks go to get more information?
So that is www.our.show/menonboats. You can also find info on our social medias, our Instagram at Speedrun Studios.
Okay.
Wonderful.
Well, thank you all so much for coming on, and thank you for co-hosting with me.
Thank you for having us.
It was wonderful. A pleasure.
Well, that was Austin Savat and Clint Leno, a Speedrun Studios production of Men on Boats, playing April 4th through 6th at Ground Floor Theater. For more information, I have speedrunstudios.org, but look at their socials and give us that web address one more time.
That's www.our.show/menonboats. Our.show/menonboats.
Wonderful. And this is the song In the Same Boat from the show Curtains. We will be right back.
Here come the three pals paddling up the rapids.
We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Austin and Clint. So we're just going to talk about some of the local stuff going on. We're waiting for Sharon Anderson of ATXtheater.org to show up here. She had some traffic issues. But I do want to point out some of the local stuff. I want to point out something that's happening. It opens in May, but it is something worth note. It is Deaf Austin Theater's production of Tiny Beautiful Things. And y'all may have seen the TV series, Tiny Beautiful Things. What's her name? With that woman and that guy, and they were talking about that thing. Anyway, it's based on that. And what is notable about this is it is the first theater show to open up the new theater here in Austin, Texas, the Sterling Stage, which is part of the Stage Austin and Sterling Event Center up on 290 and I-35. So it seems like a wonderful thing. And people that know me and Ground Floor Theater know that we work with Deaf Austin Theater a lot, and we love the work that they do, and that they're doing their own things now. And so it's a really wonderful thing. You can get information at deafaustintheater.org. The show runs May 10th through 25th at the Sterling Stage. And we went, we had a ATX Theater meeting there last weekend. Were either of you there?
I didn't see you. I could make it. Yeah.
Yeah. No. It was, it's still a construction site, but it's looking like it's going to be a nice little theater and a nice addition to, you know, we know that we have been venue deficient here in the city of Austin. And it's nice that another one's coming up, and it's right in the same area as, Austin Community College's Black Box Theater over there, and then Austin Playhouse's new big-ass theater is what I like to call it, BAT, yes. That they're building over at 290 and 183, I think, is where that is. So that's Tiny Beautiful Things, Deaf Austin Theater. Other things that are either playing or going to be opening soon, we had them on the show last week. Anklets in the Boardroom, you missed their first production on the 20... Oh, no, you didn't. The 29th of March, and then also April 20th. So you haven't missed that. And that's the company Leela. Then there's still a year with Frog and Toad over at the Zach, and it's playing through the 14th. And I know I'm going to mispronounce this. They were on the show last week, Dancing at Lunasa. Lunasa, I think is how it's pronounced. City Theater in their new space, March 15th through the 31st. Wicked is still playing. It's a two-week run, which is unusual for Broadway in Austin. Have either of you seen Wicked, either this... Oh. Production or any production?
I've seen Wicked so many times.
Yeah, me too.
Oh.
I love Wicked.
Did you read the books?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Well, I've not books plural. I've read the first one. I need to get on the sequel.
Well, my favorite is Confessions of an Ugly Stepsister that he wrote. I come to Wicked from the books. I saw the books before I saw plays. I was able to see, but it's pre-Broadway in San Francisco with the original cast. So that was good. So it's still playing through the 31st of this month. And then Home, I'm Darling, Jarrett Productions. They were on the show last week. I'm going to see the show Thursday night. So if you want to see me, go see them on Thursday. But they're playing through the 8th of April. Then opening on the 3rd of April is The Prom over at Zach, which I've never seen it live, but I did see the filmed version.
I did get to see that in New York.
You did? Really, did you like it?
Very, very fun. Yeah.
You've seen a lot of stuff, Austin.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's good. I really want to see it. I forgot the woman that played the lead.
Caitlin Kennedy.
Yes, Caitlin. Yeah, she, amazing. Seen her, you know, on TV doing things from it. Anyway, so I'm looking forward to The Prom's Zach. Again, that's April 3rd through 12th. Then we have Born with Teeth at Austin Playhouse in their secondary space, I believe. And it's the first show in that secondary space.
Second mention of teeth on the cast.
Well, we always like to keep the teeth in there. And then Into the Woods.
Yes.
Which I wrote. Are you a big fan?
I am. Yeah. I like Into the Woods a lot.
Okay. Clint's a fan. What about you?
Love the show. Nightmare to Rehearse, as someone who was in that show.
Yeah. I am. I think it's fine. Not in love with it like so many people are, but I'm fine with it. I do get angry at people that think it should end at the end of Act One, because the whole point of the show is
the
Act
point.
Show.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's Into the Woods at Mary Moody Northern Theater over at St. Ed's, the 11th of April through the 21st. They will be on the show, I believe, next week or the week after. And then at UT, we have Romeo y Juliet. In Espanol, I'm assuming, on the 10th through the 21st. But prior to that, on the 5th through the 28th, is Romeo and Juliet with the Baron's Men over at the Curtin Theater.
We have some speedrun friends at Romeo y Juliet.
Oh, so. Lovely. Lovely, lovely, lovely. So that is amazing. So that's anything else locally that I missed that you guys want to talk about, of course, other than your show?
Local,
not that
local,
I know
local.
Of.
Okay.
I mean,
always follow ATX Theater, you know.
Yep, ATXTheater.org, who I just got a text from Sharon. She is 2 minutes away, so we'll probably get just a couple minutes with her. But let's go into Today in Theater History, shall we? We have some openings. Was Joe Turner's Come and Gone, which opened in 1988. Brighton Beach Memoirs opened in 1983. I believe that's the original versus the revival. And then How to Succeed in Business, the revival with... Did I hear ugh?
Yes,
I feel that
joy.
Way about it too. This was the one with Daniel Radcliffe in 2011.
I saw that one.
Did you?
I did.
Did you love it?
I loved it.
Yeah, he's a good one.
What a man!
What a man indeed. Dancin' opened in 1978. That was the year after I got to New York. And then The Young Man from Atlanta, which I've never heard of, opened in 1997 at the Longacre Theater, and then of course in 2008. At the St. James Theater, the revival of Gypsy. I think that was the Patti LuPone version.
That sounds right.
I could be wrong, but I think I'm right. Our birthdays,
I will confidently support you.
Thank you. Our birthdays, Austin Pendleton, my cousin Vinny, did y'all see the movie?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Austin Pendleton is so funny in it. He plays the lawyer that they fire. It's just very, very funny. Bartlett Shear, or Bartlett Shure, I don't know how it's pronounced, and he's a director. Bonnie Milligan's birthday. Gloria Swanson was born in 1899. And I think that's it for the birthdays. So that's it for today in theater history. We're going to go out listening to a little bit of Daniel Radcliffe singing How to Succeed in that lovely show, How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. We'll be right back.
How to observe personnel.
We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa. Nicole is still not feeling well, so let's send our hearts and love out to her. We are fortunate enough, as it turns out, to have Sharon Anderson, who is the founding executive director of ATXtheater.org. And she's just done a wonderful job. And ran into some traffic issues, but blasted into the theater, and here she is, Sharon Anderson. Welcome to Offstage and On the Air for the first time in person.
First time in person. I'm so excited. Thank you for having me, Lisa.
We had you on during the Zoom days, because that's actually when ATX Theater began its journey into existence.
Well, we actually started a little bit before the pandemic, right? But then it turned out that the pandemic gave us time to all have lots of quality time on Zoom.
So I talk about ATX Theater all the time on the show, and I'm sure people know what it is, but just in case I got anything wrong, Sharon, what is ATX Theater?
ATX Theater is really a passion project for people who love theater, and it is a place where you can go and find out about all the events happening in Austin that have anything to do with theater. On our homepage, we have a show listing, which is just now getting a little brush up, a little upgrade. And we have every show in town. We try to have every audition in town. We also work within the theater community to help it be a little bit more efficient. For example, we have a citywide audition every year where a whole bunch of theater producers come and sit in a room and have coffee, and a whole bunch of actors come and audition all at once. So it's for both the theater community and for the entire citizenry of Austin to be able to have access to more information about theater.
Sure. You know, I often say that people don't know that theater exists outside of the things that happen at Bass Concert Hall and Zach Theater. There are, how many theaters on your roster right now?
We have 80 theater companies.
80
in
theater
Austin.
Companies.
And everyone always goes, 80? 80? It's true.
And I should say that's been basically the way it's been since I moved to Austin. When I first moved here, I looked at the Austin Circle of Theaters, which is now the Austin Creative Alliance, and there were some 80 to 100 theaters. And I went, oh my God, I was amazed. And what's beautiful, what I think is beautiful about the Austin theater community, so you've got the, you know, there's 20 or 30 core theaters that are always there. And then we have this group of theaters, you know, we have so many wonderful universities that have theater departments, and people come out and start a theater company and they live for a little while. And it's just this very living organism in our community.
It really is. And a lot of times people from one community, one theater company blend with another one. They eventually form a partnership. I hope more of that happens, actually. I'd be
Me
really
too.
Interested in having, you know, 40 more established companies instead of 80 tiny ones. Not that we have 80 tiny ones. We have some big ones. But it is a very lively and a very earnest, I would say, theater community. We want to, in the future, part of the what ATX Theater is sort of all about is helping the community be a little more sustainable.
Sure.
So we try to share resources, like, let's say, fake greenery, Lisa. Do we all need to buy fake greenery for our outdoor theater scenes? We can share that kind of stuff. We can share costumes. We can share set pieces and period furniture. And so the big dream, Lisa, one of the many big dreams, don't you think we should have a warehouse where all that stuff lives? And it's a library for props and scenery. Oh.
Sure. We have been talking about that quite a bit. I actually went and looked at some spaces to try to make that happen, because I think you were exactly right. It would be really great for me to be, oh, gee, I need some shrubberies, and I can walk through this warehouse and see, oh, I see that Austin Shakespeare has a few shrubberies. Let me call Ann Ciccolella, co-host extraordinaire, and see whether I could glom onto any of that.
Exactly.
But one of the things that I think has been a great offshoot of the timing and everything that happened through ATX Theater is one of the things that has happened, which is something I've been trying to get through people's head for so long, is that we are not in competition with one another. That Speedrun Studios' success is Ground Floor Theater's success.
Exactly.
And that's one of the things that's happened. Thanks to atxtheater.org is we're talking to each other, and we're sharing information, not hoarding that information, afraid that somebody else knowing, you know, if Def Austin Theater knows what Ground Floor Theater knows, then that's going to be bad for Ground Floor Theater, which is absolutely not true. And I think your organization helps make that a reality.
Thank you. Thank you. I think that's really, really true. And in the spirit of that, we're actually launching a ticketing site this week. We've
yes.
just started it. And one of the exciting things about that is it's a way for everybody to kind of reinforce each other. And as all the theaters share the atxtheater.org URL and more people join ATX Theater for free and get the weekly theater guide, more people get their eyeballs on more shows. So the more we all share, the more we're all helped. So,
sure. And I will tell listeners of this program, my loyal listeners, you know, when I go and I talk about all the local listings, my first stop is atxtheater.org and has been since the inception of that page. And your first stop should be atxtheater.org as well. There are other sites like Now Playing Austin and Visit Austin that do the same thing. But the focus of atxtheater.org is theater. And we haven't had that since ACOT switched to be Austin Creative Alliance.
Right, right. And I would say, I mean, those listings certainly have their value, absolutely, and no shade on those. However, I don't think they go and comb the social media and
sure.
comb the websites the way we do to make sure that we are inclusive of every single company in town. Well, we really try to do that.
Yeah, and one of the things I love that is, like, it's a value add beyond the listings is your weekly email that gets sent out to people who sign up at atxtheater.org. I'm always amazed that even on the listings, and this may change with the new listing service, because before it was aggregated by Broadway World and now it's not. Because I would always see things on your emails that I didn't see on the website.
Exactly. What you see on the website is what the producers have self-posted.
Sure.
And then a lot of smaller companies, et cetera, just never get to it. So I help them by making sure they're in the email. So if you want the fullest, most up-to-date information about this weekend, definitely the way to get that is to join for free at atxtheater.org. And then you'll be a member and I'll email you every Wednesday. Now, sometimes, Lisa, that email is at 11:59 p.m. on Wednesday. And occasionally it's at 2 a.m. on Thursday. But it'll be there by Thursday.
That's all right. I'm not awake at either of those times. So that's in our last little minute here. So tell folks we've said it a zillion times. It's in the name. Where can folks go to get information? And they can become members. We cannot use the F word that you used. So just tell people where they can go to get information.
Oh, what word did I use?
Just go tell people where they can go to get information.
To get more information about all the theater in Austin, atxtheater.org. And it's atxtheatre, because that's the way we spell it, .org. And there's a little blue button in the upper right. And that's how you get to get that weekly.
Now, do I have to be a theater professional to be a member?
Oh, no. No, no.
So anybody can sign up.
This is actually for the public.
Cool.
We really provide the information for the public. We do all the behind-the-scenes stuff with the community and to build community. But I have to say, atxtheater.org is not the person sending the email. It is made up of the 80 theater companies. We are truly an aggregated affiliation of theater makers and theater lovers.
Wonderful. So. Well, Sharon Anderson, thank you so much for coming on the show and telling us all about atxtheater.org.
Thank you so much for having me,
I really
Lisa.
Appreciate it.
Oh, it's a pleasure to see you.
Pleasure to see you, too. That was Sharon Anderson. For more information, you may visit atxtheater.org. And because I believe this, this is a song from the show Eugenius. And it's She's Amazing, and this is for Sharon Anderson.
Oh.
Okay, we are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air, and on the very last minute I have here, I just want to thank my guests, and I want to send again my wonderful feelings out to Nicole so that she feels better. And we are going to stand by for the Austin Cooperative Hour. And today we have the Austin Common Radio Hour with John Hoffner. He's sitting here trying to steal the microphone away from me even as we speak, but I won't let him have it. But in the meantime, you guys have a great day. We're going to go we'll see you next week when we look at what's happening offstage and on the air. This is from the latest, one of the new shows opening up, Hell's Kitchen, which is music by, oh my God, I forgot her name. She's a superstar. You'll figure it out. It's called Kaleidoscope. We'll see you next week.
Kaleidoscope. Tonight is shining bright, you know.